Thank you all for joining us. This is the Fats, Fuels, and Oils webinar for the week of May 3rd. Today, I have Tori Alden with us, and he's going to go over his portion of the forecast. If you have questions, go ahead and drop them in the Q&A section, and we'll be sure to get to them towards the end of Tori's presentation. With that, Tori, take it away.
Thanks, George, and thanks, everybody. Welcome to this week's webinar. It has been another week of appreciating soybean oil prices. We really have been on a tear since about mid-April, when the July contract kind of traded around 50 cents for a while, and today it's up to 63 cents. So that's 12 cents in a little over 2 weeks. It's really unprecedented. I think that it's a reflection of expectations for really strong demand and, to some extent, some limited refining capacity. So some supply issues maybe relative to the demand as these renewable diesel producers start up. What I will say is I think this is sort of just the beginning. We really expect renewable diesel production in the fourth quarter to be substantially above where it is today. And so that is what continues to drive our forecast. And it is, bear with me here just a second. Zoom buried my window. Apologize for that. Continues to drive our forecast. Now, we still are dealing with this idea that that normal planting weather and normal in early season growing conditions, as long as they're supportive, will weigh on soybean futures and in general in the soybean oil complex more specifically. That said, yesterday's crop progress report showed that farmers made substantial progress in planting the soybean crop, or at least the soybean crop that they intended to plant, with almost a quarter of the crop planted already. And soybean futures are up again today. And so we may need to rethink that idea here in the relatively near future, given the fact that so far planting is going about as well as it could. If soybean futures are going to continue to rally, then there's not really going to be much that looks like it's going to hold back soybean oil prices. And I've got to say that in that case, we probably will shift our forecast up pretty substantially here going forward, both over the summer and then in the fourth quarter, when we expect demand to really start to kick off. But this is a process where we don't want to make substantial revisions to our forecast this week and then have to turn around and lower them last week. I was talking to somebody last week, and they were saying, well, given the fact that it looks like there's going to be more acreage planted, shouldn't your forecast for soybeans be lower? And that was after a couple of days of prices falling. And I kind of said, well, I think we want to hold off and kind of see how the market reacts to this. I have the same argument against adjusting substantially to the upside. I think that ultimately the pressure from a normal planting wind or normal planting season and potentially larger than expected soybean acres will weigh on prices. It typically has in the past, but this year has been anything but typical. And so just saying there, the upside risk for the soy complex remains significantly greater than the downside risk. We got a couple of reports this week. It's the end of the month and the beginning of the month, so we got our usual fats and oils report, which showed us that domestic demand for soybean oil remained relatively strong in March. It started to bounce back. Now, this is dependent on our assumptions for trade flows, and the break between non-biofuel and biofuel is dependent on our assumptions for soybean oil used in biofuel production. And we'll talk a little bit more about the changes to the EIA report here in a minute. But you can see that that we had been kind of trailing lower. And in March, the implied domestic usage jumped back. And that could be contributing to the strength that we've seen in soybean oil prices over the last 6 weeks. If this is now sort of the baseline and this is kind of where we're headed, if you just took this and then kind of added where you were from here going forward, so you shifted all of this up basically to up here, that would make a significant difference in our outlook for ending stocks at the end of the marketing year. We expect right now ending stocks to be about 1.8 billion pounds, but if you were to shift all of that higher, you could easily fall below 1.5 billion pounds. And given the environment, that could send the nearby contracts well above 80 cents. And somebody asked me the other day whether I thought that soybean oil futures would trade above a dollar. Given that we're where we are right now and we expect the strength in domestic usage going forward, there's a real possibility of that, especially if the growing season isn't everything that a typical growing season is. So if expectations about U.S. yield start to come down at any point during the growing season, I think you'll see explosive moves higher in soybean oil prices. Again, sort of just underlining the fact that upside price risk is much more significant than downside price risk right now. For end users, what that really means is that any setback that you see, you should be taking advantage of to try and extend your coverage. I also want to talk a little bit about this is the delivery period. It's something that we typically don't talk about because it's a little bit in the weeds, but this is the notice period for soybean oil futures right now for the May contract. Nobody expected to see any deliveries because, quite frankly, some of the larger crushers aren't even selling crude to people that want to buy it. And so if they're not willing to sell it, why would you really expect any deliveries against the May contract? However, on Friday, the first notice day, we got more than 600 contracts. A couple hundred of those were quickly taken up, and we ended up with, I think, 488 on Monday, and then we're down to 12 now. We had open interest as of yesterday was about 1,200 contracts, and volume has been relatively light. I've written about this a couple of times in the daily comments. There's some potential for end users to stand for delivery. And given the fact that we've worked through most of the contracts now and there still is more open interest, you could have a situation where the nearby contract does the reverse of what crude oil did last spring, where in crude oil, you had longs that couldn't get out of the market. They wanted to sell and there were no buyers, and crude oil prices briefly went negative. In this case, you have people that want to buy and potentially not any sellers. And so the May contract could rise really sharply here before it goes off the board. I think next Friday is the 10th, maybe shortly after next Friday. That doesn't have a big impact on the rest of the curve because it is in the delivery period. When we forecast prices and we think about prices, we typically roll the contract forward before we get into first notice period because you get these weird kind of cash impacts sometimes. But it may be indicative of how strong the demand is. And if you do get some real fireworks in the May contract, I think, again, it just underlines the upside price risk for soybean oil. Outside of the strong domestic demand, we also got data from the EIA, and I think we all kind of hoped that the new EIA report would provide additional data. So they used to provide feedstock data and biodiesel production, and I think we all hoped that they would provide a similar set of data for renewable diesel production. And what they have done is eliminated the biodiesel production data series and provided total feedstock use in renewable fuel production. On one hand, that provides a more complete picture of the demand. On the other hand, for people like me that are trying to figure out how much demand fits into each category, it makes it much more difficult and much more complex to try and figure out and fit all of the pieces together. Before, basically, what I did was just copy the data from the EIA into my spreadsheet. And now what I need to do is kind of copy the total in and then look through the individual feed or the individual fuel types for each feedstock and make sure that everything kind of balances and kind of makes sense. Even after I do all of that, there's no guarantee that that the numbers that you see here are correct. And so I think the EIA is kind of taken a step backwards in an attempt to try and take a step forwards. Hopefully they'll get some input from people. I know I've sent them several questions, and maybe they will revise this down the road, but I don't know. I'm not really holding my breath for that. Either way, what we've seen is over the last couple of months, January was for renewable diesel turned out to be stronger than we had seen, and then February was even stronger. I will note that in the new biofuel production series, or it's a series that they've used for a long time. We'll talk about that in the biodiesel section. January production was particularly high, almost 200 million gallons, which is much higher than it typically has been. So whether these numbers are right or not, what I can tell you is that just from an overall perspective, they all kind of fit together. So not only does the soybean oil fit together within the different fuel categories, but if you look across all of the feedstocks, they all kind of have to fit together and make sense. And that's what we look at. So while we may not be correct down to two digits past the decimal, I think in general, we probably are capturing the trend correctly. Moving on to canola oil. And canola oil prices have remained strong, and we expect them to remain strong. This forecast hasn't really changed that much. We think that canola oil, especially if the EPA does approve the generation of RINs for canola oil and renewable diesel production, that canola oil prices will remain really well supported. Canola crush was a little bit stronger than we had anticipated, and that was a function of strong domestic demand. We saw that non-biofuel demand is really leading the charge for canola oil as opposed to soybean oil, which is kind of the opposite. I think that that's going to be a theme, even if the EPA does approve the pathway for canola oil. Just because canola oil is so expensive, it's going to be hard to fit it into the feedstock mix for renewable diesel producers outside of those that are right on the West Coast and can import canola oil from Canada. But also just because all of the other feedstocks, there's been such a draw into the biofuel industry that non-biofuel users are needing to find some source of vegetable oil or fats or grease that they can use. And canola oil, while certainly more expensive than what they were likely using before, at least has some availability. And that's something that we think will continue. For Canada, we got last week, we also got the COPA's monthly crush report, and it came in well above our expectation for March. It was like 957,000 tons, and I think we were expecting about 930,000. So we go back to this argument of who's going to blink first. Is it going to be the crushers or is it going to be exporters? So far, the crushers are continuing to crush at record or near record volumes. And if we had bigger stocks, if we had bigger Canadian stocks to work with, I would probably raise my crush forecast right about now. But we don't. We're down to 650,000 tons, and cutting that even further is something that I think is unlikely before the end of the marketing year. I tend to think that at some point exports will probably be shut off, kind of in the same way that US soybean exports have been shut off. But at least we haven't seen that show up in the data yet, so we haven't started to cut this. As we cut this, we may add a little bit to this. I think that canola crushing capacity is around 10.8 million tons. So in theory, we could add almost 500,000 tons to the Canadian crush, but we'll be really, really slow to make that change. And exports are really going to have to slow down pretty substantially before I feel like there's enough room to make that adjustment. For palm oil prices kind of followed soybean oil a little bit. They were kind of range bound there for a little bit, maybe even a little bit weaker than soybean oil over the past couple of weeks, not because they were moving lower, but because they were kind of steady while soybean oil continued to rip higher. That's driven the spread between soybean oil and palm oil out to almost 20 cents a pound, which is a level that I didn't think that we would ever see. And we expect that that's probably going to, that the spreads are probably going to remain historically wide. I don't know that we'll stay at the 20-cent level. But right now, our forecast doesn't anticipate the spreads getting back down much below 15 cents. I think we kind of are in the 12 to 15 cents for most of the contracts going forward. Palm oil rallied, though, over the last couple of days. And in fact, in the last week, we had two of the largest single-day gains that we've seen in the past year in palm oil, in part on increasing optimism about Malaysian palm oil exports. Cargo surveyor data for April showed that exports rose probably between 10 and 15% from March, and expectations right now are for production to remain relatively flat in April from March. And so we've got stocks tightening just slightly to about 1.42 million tons from like 1.45 million at the end of March. If production is up a little bit more than expected, then maybe stocks are flat to maybe even build a little bit. But I think the market's probably going to continue to focus on the pace of exports given the outbreak of the coronavirus in India and concerns about the impact that that's going to have on Indian demand. So far, it hasn't really impacted Malaysian exports. So I think the market is kind of working through this and kind of starting to figure out that even with the outbreak, that the demand from the world is still there and it's sufficient to offset any slowdown that is seen in India. And now if that's going to be the case and if exports are going to kind of recover over the next several months, I think the next thing that traders turn to is production, because while output in April might be unchanged from March, it's unlikely that that trend will continue since the seasonal trend towards much larger output is really, really strong, and we should see higher and higher output through September. If that's going to be the case, which there's no reason to assume that it's not, then ultimately exports will come back into play, and the pace of exports will determine whether stocks build or draw down. We've got stocks actually drawn down for the next couple of months before they start to build back and end up about where we expect them to be at the end of April, at the end of the marketing year. So it's going to be tough, I think, for, and as the forecast shows, for palm oil futures to come down, especially if soybean futures remain well supported. All right, on to biodiesel. So this table essentially shows the difference between the EIA's new data series for renewable fuel production, which, like I said, it's not, they've been publishing it since 2011, so it's not exactly a new series, but it's the series, I guess, that we're left with. And it's the series that it discontinued, which was domestic biodiesel production. And as you can see, in a lot of months, this series, which is supposed to be all renewable fuel production, biodiesel, renewable diesel production, and then a couple of other categories as well, has actually been below what the EIA reported for biodiesel production alone. To say that's confusing is an understatement, and to say that it makes it difficult to try and figure out what biodiesel production is, or what the EIA thinks biodiesel production is, and what they think renewable diesel production is also understating the issue. So in the interim, until we come up with a better system to kind of deal with this, or the EIA makes some changes, what we're going to do is effectively continue on kind of the way that we continued on before the change. And we are, I think, no, this isn't the right chart. Bear with me here just one second. This is it. We're just going to use the EMTS data as our base, and then we're going to continue to use the historical relationship between the EMTS data in the old EIA data series to estimate biodiesel production, and then we take the EMTS data for renewable diesel production. Obviously, this isn't going to match up with the data that we get from the EIA, and frankly, the old biodiesel series didn't match up either, and that's why there's this historical relationship. But when you see our data here from January 2021 going forward, just know that the EIA is an estimate, and for most cases, we just are using that historical relationship. And there are some cases, like in February, where EIA provides enough feedstock data. And once we fit all of the feedstock data together, we can then sort of back into a production number based on the historical trend in the yield for biodiesel production. And that's what we've done in February. So the typical relationship between the EMTS and the EIA would have suggested a lower number for February, but then that made the feedstock usage look really strange, and I think it was negative in sort of some of the balancing categories, and so we have adjusted it up to 150. All right, and then I see George is back, so I will kind of quickly run through our gross margin forecast. You can see the rise in soybean oil, which we're using in our biodiesel feedstock mix, has driven that into the negative, more negative without credits, but it's driven it into the negative, even with credits. We expect that to continue and to kind of balance out around 50 cents. Renewable diesel hasn't taken as large a hit because we don't include soybean oil, and the price appreciation in the low CI feedstocks hasn't been as strong. For our RIN forecast, we expect RINs to remain pretty well supported. This forecast might even be a little conservative, especially if biodiesel production slows down because of the negative margins. And finally, our LCFS credit price, this really hasn't changed. We continue to expect a slow decline in credit prices as renewable diesel production ramps up. Okay. With that, I will open it up for questions just in the nick of time.
All right, Tori, thanks. Here's some of the questions that we have for you. Any relevant reaction in the market from last week's Supreme Court hearing on SREs?
No, and we've gotten this question a couple of times. I kind of think that no matter really what that decision was going to be, that given the Biden administration's view on renewable fuels, that they were probably going to find a way to offset any SREs, or a way for the EPA not to grant any SREs. So, I haven't really seen anybody that has talked a lot about that decision, and I'm not sure that it's having any kind of impact on the market.
Okay. Have you seen any delays in the construction of these new renewable diesel plants?
We have not really. We got a question a couple of weeks ago, or maybe on a webinar, about permitting delays in California. And I asked around with a bunch of people about that specific issue. Generally, what I got back from people was that, you know, building something in California is always difficult. And so if there were delays due to trucking or whatever, that wouldn't surprise them. As an aside, and an anecdotal thing that I'll say here is in Florida here, there's actually a street in the city that I live in where all of the big trucks drove down that was kind of a residential street, and it made the news, and the city council got involved and they changed it so that the trucks couldn't drive down that street anymore. If that can happen in Florida, I'm just saying that California is probably an order of magnitude more difficult, but I haven't heard of any specific delays in construction or in the timeline for any of these plants. We do cover the list of plants, and I think we provide the opening dates. Maybe we don't provide the opening dates, but we provide the list of plants and the capacities for those plants in our Outlook report. And so since that gets updated quarterly, that's a good place to find out what's going on in terms of production and when we expect people to come online.
And for more information on that, you can go to our website, click on reports, and on the Jacobson website. Tori, what about canola spreads remaining the same versus historical to soybean oil?
Yeah, I think that is something that may continue here in the short term. Like I said, canola oil is going to kind of, in my mind, is going to kind of backfill for non-biofuel, certainly ahead of the decision by the EPA to grant the pathway for renewable diesel. Once the pathway for renewable diesel is approved, I think that there is some potential for those spreads to widen out a little bit, because I think, while I don't think that it's going to be a huge volume of canola oil that starts to go into renewable diesel processing, I do think that there's going to be some, and so it will reduce the amount of canola oil that is available for non-biofuel uses. And in general, non-biofuel producers can, because the vegetable oil is such a small portion of the overall cost structure, can afford to pay up more than biofuel producers. I mean, if you're producing mayonnaise, that's one thing, obviously, then that's so the veg oil is a big component of your cost structure. But if you're producing plastic, it's really negligible. And so paying up a little bit, everybody wants to maintain the profit margins, but paying up a little bit is not a big issue.
All right. You mentioned your RIN forecast was probably conservative. How high could it go if, say, soybean oil goes to 80 cents?
Boy, if soybean oil goes to 80 cents, I would say, and this is kind of a hip shot. I would, to answer this question properly, I'd kind of open our model up and run it through our model. But I think if soybean oil goes to 80 cents, just based on the moves that we've seen recently, I think you could probably say, let's see, 80 cents is 80 cents. If we call that 15 cents above, I would call it 165, 175, somewhere in there. Maybe a little bit higher. In the gross margin monitor, you could see that the appreciation in RIN prices didn't offset the increase in soybean oil prices. And so it's not necessarily a one-to-one relationship, but it's also not a linear relationship, right? Because as the cost of the feedstocks go up, at some point, and we may be at that point now, production starts to slow. And so then once production starts to slow, which is something that we haven't necessarily seen yet, but once production starts to slow, then you might see RIN prices react more to increases in soybean oil prices.
Okay, well, that's all we have time for today. Tori, thank you for answering those questions. Audience, thanks for sending those questions over. And we look forward to talking to you next week. And just a reminder, we have the Jacobson Virtual Biofuels and Feedstock Conference, May 26. If you haven't registered for that, you can I'll send it in an email following this with the video link. So you can just go click on that and go over and register. So thank you all, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.